Okay, so we are recording. So our Mishnah talked about four avot nezikin, four principal categories of damage, and then we had two brises. So brises are again Tannaitic literature written from the same time, but not categorized within the Mishnah. So from the same sort of time period, where one extended that number from 4 to 13. And then we left off with the brisa that extended from 13 to 24. So that was Reb Chiya. Reb Chiya had the full list of 24. When we listed the 13, we talked about... Actually, sorry, I forgot to mute everybody. I'm going to mute everybody and feel free to unmute, as always, if you have anything to say. You have the ability to do so yourself. But you've just for the recording, easier to keep everybody muted. And so Rav Oshia was the opinion which listed 13 avot nezikin, 13 head categories, main categories. And Rabbi Chiya is the one who lists 24. So we'll start again from Rabbi Chiya. We've spent a little bit of time talking about Rav Oshia. Rav Chiya, I must say, actually, that I'll need a bit of help with this. We'll see how far we get. In one sense, you could spend weeks and weeks and weeks on just Rabbi Chiya, because really, these are what one might call Shas topics, meaning that they cover all of Shas, all of Shas being an abbreviation of the Shisha, Sidre, Mishnah, all of the Gemara. Really, these touch upon many, many different areas of Halacha, some of which I'm more familiar with, and some of which I've had to do a little bit of research on, and hopefully I won't be too... unable to answer questions, but we'll, as I say, we're not going to spend time focusing on each and every single one, but we do have to understand them at a basic level in order to figure out why he includes them. The basic premise here is we're going to figure out why they're included and why his list is different to Rav Oshia's list. We've already talked about why Rav Oshia's list is different to the Mishnah. We talked about the fact that it was the focus on more active damage or damage. We talked about a difference between a person doing damage and a person not doing damage, and whether our Mishnah did include people doing damage or more indirectly people doing damage. That was all really the discussion surrounding Rav Oshia. Rav Chiya, the Braisa starts 10 or so lines from the bottom. It is 11 lines from the bottom. 11 lines from the bottom of 4b. 11 lines from the bottom of Dalet Amud Bet. Second word on the line. Mine actually has a helpful full stop just beforehand, although not every Gemara will necessarily have that. So Toni Rabbi Chiya, everybody with me? Okay, great. Toni Rabbi Chiya. So this is Rabbi Chiya's brisa now. Esrim va'arba'a avos nezikin. So he lists 24. Tashlumei kefel. So Tashlumei Kefel is that there are some cases in which a person doesn't just have to pay back what they stole or what they damaged, but actually they need to double that payment. So for instance, somebody who steals at nighttime, actually I think we ended off talking about this a little bit, somebody who steals in a sort of surreptitious way, in a hidden way, shows that they are... that they are more fearful of human beings catching them than they are of the Almighty catching them. And as a result, the Torah actually gives them a fine in addition to the payment that they have to pay back. They also have to pay an additional fine. They have to pay a second amount back. And that is established by the Torah. Again, that's not because it's fair or unfair to the person who was damaged or who was stolen from. That is simply a fine in recognition of this particular type of damage. So that's kefel, paying twice as much. Tashlumei arba'a v'chamisha, we also touched upon last week or last time, is when you pay back four and five times as much. So if you steal a cow or an ox or a sheep, And then you either shecht it or you sell it on. So then you pay four times back or five times back. Not just a value of the sheep, but four or five times as much. V'ganov v'gazlon. So those are two separate categories. So we're now up to four. We had kefel, four and five times. Ganov and gazlon. Somebody who, again, do two different types of thieves. two different types of people who steal. Ve'edim zomimin. Edim zomimin, a very, very important halachic category, difficult to sum up in one moment. They're really most of the beginning of Masechet Makot talks about Edim Zomimin. They are basically witnesses who try to falsely accuse or try to claim that somebody was in a certain place or that they witnessed a certain act which they didn't actually witness. So they are false witnesses, but they're stronger than false witnesses because they're basically trying to incriminate a person for something they never did. And if they are caught, then so it's actually a very unique halacha. I don't want to get into it now because I must say that I've not learned Maseches Makos particularly well, and so I will be stretched a little bit. But it is initially difficult to understand, and it is something which is discussed at great length by the Gemara and by the Rishonim. But the strange thing, just to point out, that the strange thing about Edim Zomimin, or the difficult thing initially to understand about Edim Zomimin, is that they are only liable, and this will be relevant for us, they're only liable to pay if they don't succeed. Okay, so if they don't succeed, so if they try to basically their punishment is Ka'asher zamam velo ka'asher asa. That's what the Gemara says. That if they try to get someone, try to cause someone to have the death penalty, and they don't succeed, then they are liable to the death penalty. If they do succeed, then they are not liable to the death penalty. And there's a difference between the two, distinction between the two. So again, that's difficult for us to understand initially. And that's really something which is worth discussing when someone learns Maseches Makos. Maybe we'll do that after this. But I, as I said, just important to appreciate that that is the case that it's referring to. Edim Zomimin, so they cause damage, or they try to cause damage to somebody else, and ultimately they are unsuccessful. They are caught. V'ha'ones, v'ha'mafata. So these are different types of rape, different types of forced encounters with a woman. Motzi Shemra is a sort of a similar thing. So we extend Motzi Shemra in other contexts to any sort of libel, basically any sort of spreading gossip or false gossip about a certain person. Motzi Shemra in the Torah is really very, very limited to specifically about a woman. When a person marries a woman and expects to find that she has that she is a virgin, and finds, or doesn't find, but claims that he finds that that is not the case, and makes a big fuss about that, and actually embarrasses her and her family as a result. So that is the Torah, classic Torah case of Motzi Shemra, and that is again a form of damages. That is one, another one that makes Reb Chiya's list. V'hamatame. So matame is now talking about a case where a Kohen has truma. Truma was one of the gifts that was given to a Kohen and has to be eaten in purity. If it becomes tame, then it's no longer able to be eaten. Can't be eaten by a Kohen because it's impure, and it can't be eaten by anybody else because they're not a Kohen. So they've caused them damage in that case. Okay, that in that case, at least the damage is relatively obvious. V'hamedamea. Medamea is basically you end up mixing truma or maaser or those sorts of things with regular food, which means that, let's say, I'm a Yisrael, so I can't eat those foods, and now that you've mixed it with my other foods, I'm not sure whether I'm allowed to have, I can't have the other food either. I have to end up selling it to a Kohen because I'm not sure whether I'm able to eat it. The Kohen knows that I'm basically forced to sell it, so you end up having to sell it cheap. So again, that's another form of damages. Again, each of these, as I said, we could spend a long time talking about, and we will discuss some of the details, but not all of them. V'hamadamea, v'hamanaseich. Manaseich is another, again, trying to figure out what exactly the case is referring to, but in principle, manaseich is referring to somebody who uses someone else's wine to serve Avodah Zarah, and in so doing, makes it prohibited, right? We're not allowed to drink wine that is used for Avodah Zarah purposes. And one of the questions actually is why that even works. So for instance, usually let's say someone uses their own item for Avodah Zarah, so you're not allowed to use that. Let's say they use a piece of wood and they decide that this piece of wood is a deity of sorts, and they decide to bow down to that piece of wood, so you're not allowed to use that piece of wood. But let's say they do that with your piece of wood. Let's say someone comes along to shul, right? Let's say someone comes along outside number one Cecil Park and decides that this is their holy place and they're going to bow down to the front doors. So do we now have to replace the front doors? We're no longer allowed to use them because they've bowed down to them? So the answer is no. That doesn't work usually with someone else's property. So why that works in this particular case is an interesting topic, how that can possibly work. How can you damage someone else's wine in that way if usually we say that to bow down to somebody else's to someone else's property doesn't cause that to become an avodah zarah and problematic for them to use. So that's but as I said, it does make the list, so we'll have to figure out why that is. Vahani Tlesar, and the final ones on the list, so those were 11 that he counted himself, and the final 13 on the list are the 13 that Rabbi Chiya had, right? Rabbi Chiya had the four from our Brisa, and the four from our Mishnah, and nine more. Then we added another 13, we added another 11, and that makes total of 24 that made it onto Rabbi Chiya's list, okay? Obviously, each one will take us time to figure out, but any questions on the sort of general points before we go on to the details? Okay.
Rabbi, sorry, I just had a quick question.
That's right.
Hi. The first four that Rabbi here talks about, Kefel, Arba, Hamisha, Ganav, and Gazdan, isn't Kefel and Arba, Hamisha part of, don't they fall part of Ganav and Gazdan?
Yeah, that's a good question. Why they are distinguished from him, we'll come back to that. So we'll probably touch on that a little bit because let's come back to that question, because soon the Gemara is going to ask why Ganav Gazlan is not included in other categories, and when we talk about that, I think we'll hopefully be able to understand why we distinguish between each of those. Okay, that's a good point. Yes. Okay. So that's the Brisa of Rabbi Chiya. So we've now reached the end. Ha Arba, Ha Esrim Ba'arba. That is now seven lines from the end, towards the bottom of 4b. V'Rab Osha, my time at Lo Tani. So now we begin to get into the details as we figure out why Rabbi Osha seems to have his list of 13 and spiders coming down from the roof. You can tell we're having Shin and Sukkah. So you can tell why Rabbi Osha. So now we're going to try and figure out why Rabbi Osha has his limited list, or somewhat limited list, whereas Rabbi Chiya has a more expansive list. What was it that led Rabbi Chiya to include more things? And the Gemara answers very simply, deceptively simply, because we're going to have to we're going to basically take apart almost everyone to figure this out. But it says, "My time elotoni honi bimamona kamairi biknasa." Lo Kamairi. So he says he only, Rabbi Chiya only included on his list things which fall into the category of what the Gemara terms Mamona, which I'll explain in a moment. And Rabbi Chiya expands it to include even Knasa. So Knasa is the Aramaic word for Knas, which means a fine. Okay, so it's basically a penalty payment. Whenever we pay things back, sometimes we're paying, or let's say a person damages. So sometimes you're paying back because you actually owe the money, because it's logical that the amount of money has a sort of a correlation to the damage that was caused. And at other times, it's simply a fine. It's a penalty payment. So for instance, a parking violation is clearly a penalty payment. I don't think there's any logical connection between where you park and the amount of money that you actually have to pay back, but it's a fine. Okay, that's a legitimate a system to set up in most cases, but it is definitely a fine. So the Gemara also has this distinction between the two. Some things are mamona, some things are simply repaying there's almost like we actually have to figure out what the definition of mamona is versus kanasa, but in principle mamona means that it is a basic basic sort of requirement to pay back. It's like a logical sort of repayment of an amount of money based on the damage that you did, or based on the problems that you caused. Whereas kanasa is a fine, is a penalty payment. There's always additional to that. Thought I could hear some children. Okay, so that's the distinction that the Gemara draws. Now, continues. The first question is Ganav v'Gazlan. So those are the cases that Jeff was just asking about. Ganav v'Gazlan, says the Gemara, Dimomonohu, Lisnik. Right, so they say, so initially the Gemara says, Ganav v'Gazlan should be Mamona. What does that mean? It means I stole from you, so I have to pay back to you as well, right? I have to pay back to you as well. So I think this is really the answer to Jeff's question. When it comes to a Ganav, when it comes to someone who steals surreptitiously, so you're paying back two different payments. You're paying back firstly the amount that you owe, and then there's a penalty payment in addition. So the kafel is the penalty payment in addition. What we see from the Gemara here is when we're talking about a ganov, in that context, we're referring to the initial payment. So let's say I stole, a very nice watch from you. It's worth £1,000. So if I sneak into your house in the middle of the night and steal the watch worth £1,000, I have to pay back £2,000. £1,000 of that falls under the category of ganov in this brisa. It's basically that's the value of the watch. That's what you're paying back. The other £1,000 is the penalty payment. That also does happen to go to the owner of the watch, but that's just a bonus from their side. That really is a penalty that comes from Shemayim, in a sense, from Torah law. And the other interesting thing that we see from this as an aside is that Ganav and Gazlan are both paying back really what they owe, yet they're categorized separately. So we see that the impetus, as it were, or the reason why they are paying seems to be so fundamentally different that they're categorized differently. So even though they are basically, they have stolen an amount of money and they have to pay back that exact same amount of money, the Gemara seems to understand, for whatever reason, that which is really something which one could spend a long time on later on in Boa Kama, in the seventh parak, where it talks a lot about theft. But again, that initial payment seems to be so fundamentally different depending on how exactly the theft is done, that they are categorized differently as different categories of damages.
Rabbi?
Yes.
Let's say the watch is stolen, a £1,000 value watch, but it's actually returned intact as it was.
Right.
Do you have to pay a fine and restitution?
No. If you return the watch, then that counts as the amount of money, yeah. And then you pay the penalty, assuming you stole it, assuming you fall under the category of Ganav. If you fall under the category of Gazlan, you actually accomplish, if you're a Gazlan, you actually accomplish a mitzvah by returning the watch intact, as opposed to just getting away, as opposed to just paying the money back. If you actually return the watch intact, you accomplish a mitzvah. Probably not a mitzvah we should seek to do, but again, once you find yourself in that situation, then that's viewed as a better thing to do, to actually return the object intact. Fine. So we haven't talked about why this. Yeah. So basically, Ganav and Gazlan, according to the Gemara at this point, are not considered to be penalty payments. They're considered to be basic repayment of the damage that you caused. And therefore, that's our first question. Why would Rav Oshia not include those? We've just said that Rav Oshia includes anything that is a basic repayment of the damages, whereas Rav Chia is only adds on things which are, his expansive list is including things which are penalty payments. Ganav v'Gazlan, at first glance, seem to not be penalty payments, or at least this part of them is not penalty payments. So Dimamona who listening. So Hakatanile, so the Gemara responds, Hakatanile, he's already taught the case of a Ganav and a Gazlan. He's already taught the case of somebody stealing something and having to pay back for what they stole. Where did he do that? This is now Rav Oshia we're referring to in the list of 13. He seemed to include that somewhere. Where did he include that? Shomer Chinam Vahashoel, in the case where the categories where he referred to a Shomer Chinam, somebody who is an unpaid guardian, somebody who's looking after something for free, or a Shoel, somebody who borrows something for free. Those particular cases include some sort of theft. How do they include some sort of theft? So let's see if Rashi if Rashi puts it nicely, as he often does. Okay, it's quite extensive, the Rashi. So let's try and just explain it outside. So let's concoct the following scenario, or portray the following scenario. So you asked me to, or I asked you to borrow. Let's use the watch example as well. We'll stick with the simpler one for now. You asked me to watch your watch for free. You asked me to look after your watch for the next week. Say I'm going away on holiday. Can you please look after my watch? It's very expensive. You come back from your holiday and I say to you, I'm very sorry, your watch was stolen. Very sorry, your watch was stolen. And it wasn't my fault. So because I was a free guardian, because you weren't paying me, so I have a relatively low level of liability in halacha. And therefore, as long as I prove that I wasn't totally negligent, right? Let's say, I show that it was in my drawer in my bedroom, and I always turn the alarm on at night in my house, and the front door was locked. So they were obviously very clever to manage to take it. So I didn't do any obvious negligence. So I would be potter, right? I would be not considered liable for that theft, right? Now, a week later, I'm spotted in wherever I am, on some beach. Someone takes a picture of me and I happen to be wearing that exact same watch. Turns out it wasn't really stolen. I just didn't want to give it back. So I claimed it was stolen and I kept it for myself. So that's what's called Toen Ta'anas Ganav. You claim that it was stolen, but actually you stole it yourself. So that case... the Gemara is saying, is the one which Rabbi Oshia was including in where it's already included, right? Because we already have a case of theft that is included within his brisa, and therefore it was unnecessary to have a totally separate category of theft. Now, it's interesting. What we see from here is, this is a very interesting thing, is that fundamentally there are two really different ways of looking at that claim. In fact, the Gemara actually says this more explicitly. So let's go on in the Gemara. So the Gemara says, right, surely, it's already included. It's already included in these categories because if they steal it, then they are liable to pay. And therefore, we already have that included within those head categories. Right, so we say, but Rabbi Chiya's list of 24 also includes Shomer Chinam and Ashoel, also includes those guardians. And if that's the case, then he should also have Ganav and Gazlan already included. Why does he have a separate category? Why does he count these two as separate? In his list of 24, he also has those two. So now he seems to have unnecessary categories in there. So the Gemara responds, Hotoni Le Shomer Chinam and Ashoel. Now, second to last line, Toni Mamona de Osali, sorry. Tony, he taught those. Mamona de Osa Liyodi, middle of the second last line. Mamona de Osa Liyodi behetera Vakotani, Mamona de Osa Liyodi beisura. So he said he taught separately the, depending on whether the object or the money came into your hands legally or in a permitted way, and distinguished between that and when the money came into your hands in a forbidden way, right? So to spell that out, that he's saying that fundamentally there is a difference between when you give me something and then I give me something of your own accord and then I steal it afterwards by keeping it for myself and claiming that someone else took it. That is fundamentally different from me taking it from you in the first place. So it's almost like the taking distinguishes the two. So what we see from here is a very, very interesting thing, that there are actually two fundamentally different ways that you can view that particular case. When I stand, and there are many Achronim who spell this out more explicitly and more eloquently than I will, but what they say is as follows, that when I am a guardian and I'm looking after something for you, and then I choose to keep it for myself, I actually end up stealing it afterwards. So one can view that as basically being under the category of guardianship. It's basically a sort of the damage that I'm causing is within the category of my guarding, or of my lack of guarding, of my lack of looking after of your object. Or I am effectively a thief, right? And the way that you view it basically depends on how you categorize it and might actually determine some of the details of that. So whether it's viewed more as a poor watching or an obvious negligence. It's like a, it's like worse than negligence. It's basically it is it's it, it, you you were a bad shomer, you're a bad guardian. You weren't just, it's not, not like you made a mistake. It wasn't even negligence. It was worse than that. It was a step worse, but it's still on that same scale. It's still on the scale, the guardian scale. Or one can view it as just nothing to do with being a guardian. You've stolen something, and that is the category in which you fall, totally, totally separate from being a guardian. So again, that perhaps is the difference between Rav Oshia and Rabbi Chiya, the way that they are viewing this particular example. That's, as I say, quite an interesting element within that particular example. That case is actually a very, very interesting case. Comes up a lot in Bava Metzia, and has many, many ramifications of it. One of which is another interesting one. The more complicated case we didn't really talk about. We focused on an unpaid guardian who says it was stolen and therefore they're not liable. But actually a shoel, right, one who borrows something would be liable anyway. So I say to you, it was stolen, the watch was stolen, and I have to pay you back, right? And I have to pay you the amount because it was stolen. And then it turns out that it wasn't stolen. I kept it for myself. So then one wonders what the damage exactly was. So we see from here that there was some sort of damage done, that even though in theory, you end up with the same amount of money, the fact that you kept that in a forbidden way, right? You ended up keeping the watch and just paying back the money, is still considered to be some sort of hezek, some sort of damage that is done, and therefore Rabbi Chiya actually includes that in the or Rabbi Oshia and Rabbi Chiya really include it, both of them include it within this category of damages. I know that was yes. If anyone wants me to repeat that last point, I can do that again. Maybe it wasn't said so clearly. Or any questions, we'll take a pause now if anybody has any questions on what we've said so far. Yes, George, I think you've got to unmute yourself. Oh, no question.
Can we just go over the difference between a ganef and a gazlan? A gazlan is it's robbery and theft.
I think David was saying that actually last week. I don't think it's exactly the same as robbery and theft, though I'm not an expert in English law and robbery and theft, but the simplest difference between a ganav and a gazlan is that one basically steals. The way the Gemara categorizes it simply is that a ganav steals at night and a gazlan steals during the day. But it's not just about the time of day. It basically means that a gazlan steals in a more brazen way. It means that they're not worried about being caught by human beings. It means that they are, let's say, someone who mugs someone would be considered to be a gazlan. Somebody who breaks in the dead of night and is hiding from other people would be considered to be a ganav. And the distinction the Gemara draws is that the ganav is more worried about human beings than they are about being caught by the Almighty, and that's why they have this penalty payment added on. Whereas a gazlan shows that they're just not interested either way. They're basically using brute force to steal, and as bad as that is, they don't get this extra penalty payment added on.
A ganav is treated worse.
Yes.
Than a gazlan.
Yes, exactly.
That surprises
me. There are elements in which a gazlan is treated worse, but in this particular way, it is. The gazlan actually seems to be a little bit more. there are a number of distinctions, or there are a number of ways in which people distinguish between the two. Some also distinguish that a gazlan is more of a damage, whereas a I don't remember the exact phraseology, but a ganav and a gazlan actually also appears to be more of a personal attack on the person, whereas a ganav is again a bad thing to do, but it's less personal. I think I mentioned last week, and it's not as black and white as this, but one can see that ganav leans slightly into the what we would refer to as bin adam la makom camp. Slightly more into the into the category of laws that are between us and God, whereas Gazlan is very firmly in the laws that are between us and human beings. So again, which one is worse? Depends. There are elements of both that are bad, but in terms of the payment, the penalty payment only applies to a Ganav as opposed to a Gazlan.
Is it that the Ganav tries to conceal what he's done, whereas the Gazlan is a bit more open about it?
Yeah, brazen.
Right. Yes. So would that not, you know, he's a willful sinner in a sense,
which should make it worse.
Well, no, the one who hides it. Isn't
the one who hides it is willful.
Is more devious. It's more devious, isn't it?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, I could be. It's not something I'm familiar with, but I just.
No, it could be. As I say, I think it's very clear that this is a penalty from Shamayim, as it were. You know, so something that the Torah says. It's not one that is there in some areas of. Hezek, we have actually in general on the penalty payments. When it comes to penalty payments, as I say, there's less of a clear logic to maybe logic is the wrong word, but there's less of a clear correlation between what was done and the penalty payment that is actually paid back. Whereas the repayment, obviously, there is a correlation between the two. So in this case, it's just something that, you know, the Torah has said that in this case there is this additional payment because of something about a ganav, which we could spend a long time talking about. Whether that's, as I say, more of an act of denial of the fact that God is watching as opposed to human beings watching over us, that's the sense that Gemara seems to give. But for some reason or another, it does get this additional penalty payment added on. As I said, the Bryce itself makes clear that even the basic payment, even the payment of restitution, still is different from each other. So it makes it sound like it's not just different in the penalty payment, but it's actually different in the basic payment as well. Because our Mishnah said, our Braisa pointed out, as Jeff pointed out earlier, our Braisa has both Kefel, right, which is the penalty payment, and later it then has Ganav and Gazlan, which the Gemara categorizes as Mamona, as restitution. So we're just talking about the first £1,000 in our scenario from before. Just the first £1,000, it seems to be fundamentally different whether a person is a Ganav or a Gazlan. So as I said, definitely lots more to talk about on that front. But that distinction is one that the Torah is very, very very, very clear on, and we could spend, as I say, the many, 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 many pages in Shas that talk about the various distinctions between the two.
Further question, if I may,
please.
The distinction between a shomer chinam and a shoel, with the shomer chinam, am I asking you to look after it, whereas in the hashoel you're borrowing it?
Exactly. Yes. Correct. They're basically two opposite ends of the looking after spectrum. The in-between two cases, which we don't talk about here, are renting, where I'm paying you for the privilege of using your item, or a shomer sachar, where you're paying me for looking after it, right? So those are the two in-between ones. The two extreme ends are shomer chinam, which has a very low level of liability because I'm basically doing you a favor by looking after it, and a shoel, where you're doing me the favor and therefore has a very, very high level of liability. Okay, so that's just the first two of the category. We're now turning over onto Hey Ahmed Aleph 5a to talk about Edim Zomim. Or was there something else I wanted to talk about actually here? So, okay, well, maybe we'll turn back afterwards to talk about it afterwards. But now let's begin to just talk a little bit about Edim Zomim. So Edim Zomim Demamonahu. Again, the Gemara wants to know. So we said that the difference is between those that are basic payments as opposed to those which are knas, which are considered to be penalty payments. Edim Zomim seems to be a basic payment. So what exactly is the payment that we're referring to? So let's come back to that in a moment. But just to begin with, we'll begin by saying, Edim Zomim Demamonahu, right? Why is it Mamona? Because they're paying back what they tried to, the damage that they tried to cause to the other person. So, Lisni he should have taught it. Rabbi Oshia should have taught it in his brisa. So Savarla ka Rabbi Akiva. They are the Gemara responds that he is following the opinion of Rabbi Akiva, who says Ein Mashalmin al pi atzmon, that they only pay they don't pay if they admit to their deceit. So let's draw the category. So I bring another witness and I say that I saw Joe stealing from somebody else, right? And therefore I'm trying to get him to end up paying back that money. In the end, I admit that I'm making the whole thing up, right? Me and this other witness are making the whole thing up. We're making the whole thing up. So Rabbi Kivis says that they don't actually pay back. This this principle, the reason why Rabbi Kivis says that is because he views it as a penalty payment. He doesn't view it as restitution. And there is a very important shas principle, comes up many, many, many times, that of what we call mode biknas potter. So if I admit to something, then I do have to pay back a basic payment, but I don't get added on the additional penalty payment. So if I basically admit to the wrongdoing, then I wouldn't pay the second thing. So let's go back to the case of a ganav. If I steal something at night, then I have a change of heart and I return the object the next day, or I turn myself into the police station and I say, I'm very sorry, I did wrong, and I'm returning the object. So returning the object or paying back is enough, and I don't receive the penalty payment, because what we say, mode biknas potter, somebody who admits to their wrongdoing doesn't have the penalty payment, they only have the basic payment. Not exactly the same, but it does remind me a little bit of, again, when you get a fine, sometimes they say that if you don't argue it, then you'll get paid. You only have to pay half the amount. Basically, it's helpful to the system, and so we're not going to do the additional penalty. We're not going to add that on, and therefore that is waived. Again, there are many, many instances of that, and when it applies, when it doesn't apply. But this particular case where we are applying it, what we see is that Rabbi Akiva, by saying that Edim Zomerman who admit that they have made up this whole story and therefore are not considered to be liable, we see that it falls under the category of a knas. It falls under the category of a penalty payment and not a basic restitution, not a paying back for what they have done. Now,
good question.
Go on. Let's take a quick question, because I want to just make sure that we want to try and just drill down to the details of what Edim Zomerman is and what case we're talking about. Yes, but go on, Andy.
That's a very good question. If you're talking about conspiring witnesses.
Yes.
Okay, and then the perpetrator, by his own admission, says, actually, I'm the liar, I actually didn't do this.
No, not the perpetrator, the conspiring witnesses. They admit that they're making it up.
Oh, it's the witnesses, not the individual.
Yeah, correct. The witnesses, the individual hasn't done anything. Yeah, sorry. The individual hasn't done anything. The witnesses say, we're making the whole thing up. Actually, we do feel bad that we're going to end up making this fellow liable to pay. So we admit to that. So Rabbi Kiva says, as a result of that, they are putter. Now, it's a whole interesting case. Question. Well, yes, Jeff.
One more point, sorry. Can't you say that it's Edim Zomerman isn't Mamona because they haven't actually caused any damage?
Okay, so that's what I was coming to now. Okay, so that's Tosis's question, I think. Yes. Yeah, that's Tosis's question. That's one of the questions they come up with. What exactly is the damage that they've caused? Because Edim Zomerman, as I mentioned earlier, is this very strange case where if they succeed, then they're not liable, at least for that, right? Might be liable for something else. But as Edim Zomerman, they're not liable for this particular punishment if they succeed in what they have done. So it's only if they, let's say the following. I get two witnesses who claim that Joe stole something, right? And then they're found to be totally false, right? They're found to be they're disproven. So they are then liable to pay that amount, right? Because they are disproven. Now, Joe hasn't paid a penny, right? So they've not actually caused him any damage. Now, the truth is that you could still, certainly in in our world, you would still be caused a fair amount of damage. I would imagine that if you're taken to court for doing something, and even if you end up being proven to be totally innocent, it probably does cause you a huge amount of damage as a result. But the Gemara seems to imply that even in theory, if you know, everything goes back to normal and nothing actually happens, you still would be liable. So again, Jeff, this sort of backs up Rabbi Kiva, right? Comes back to the same point, right? It does make it sound like it's a knas, like it's a penalty payment. Doesn't sound like they are paying back. Tosis gives.
And who do they make the penalty payment to?
They would make it
to the person they've defamed.
Yeah, it is to that person. Yes, I believe. Yeah. Or most of the penalty payments tend to go to the other person. So, for instance, again, let's say I stole your watch and end up paying the penalty payment back to you. Again, it doesn't go to Beis Din or anything like that. It goes to goes back to the
if they simply make a false claim that Joe stole the watch,
right?
And he didn't. So,
and
the compensation
and
goes to Joe.
Yes.
Even though he hasn't done anything at all, except
well,
they've tried to
make him liable. So again, the damage seems to have been done, if there is any damage, which is part of our discussion, but the Gemara seems to imply that there is, more than imply, the Gemara is clear that there is some sort of damage going on here, because that's why it's categorized in this case of damages. So he does receive the payment. As I said before, when it comes to a knas, when it comes to a penalty payment, it doesn't seem like this penalty payment is something which is valued based on the amount of damage that has been caused to him, because it's a penalty payment, right? So it's not set based on the amount of damage that was caused to him. It's set based on what they tried to do to him. So that's in itself something which is which is more difficult in some ways. But that's what penalty payments are. Penalty payments are sort of fixed as opposed to being linked to the damage, or obviously linked to the damage that has actually been caused, as Mamona might be. Actually, I think there is a good definition of that elsewhere. Okay. No, I'm not sure exactly where that is, but there should be quite a good definition of Mamona versus Kanas elsewhere. Oh yeah, I think the Rashi at the top actually puts it quite well. Okay, so let's just brief. If you want to look at the Rashi in the top right hand corner of Hey Ahmed Aleph, so this is top right hand corner of 5A. As we said, on the inside of the page is always Rashi, outside of the page is always Tosas, or well, almost always Rashi, almost always Tosas. Adim Zomerman Demamonohu. So he's now talking about Adim Zomerman, but at least the beginning of Rashi is not specifically talking about Adim Zomerman. He simply defines what Mamona is. He says, "To call Hamashalim Yoser Alma Shehizik." They pay even more than the damage that they caused. Kagon Kefil V'Tashlume Arba V'Chamisha Kori Knas. So he says basically anyone who pays more than the damage that they caused ends up, that's what we categorize as a knas. Now, that's Rashi's definition. There are others who may disagree with that, who may say that the definition of a knas is something slightly different, and actually sort of I've been presenting it in a slightly different way. But basically he goes on to continue to clarify Ukagon, the end of the second line in Rashi. Kol Dovar Kotsuv Ha'omer Batorah. Anything that is a fixed amount that the Torah states also counts as a knas, counts as a penalty payment. Kagon Chamishim Shel Onus Umafate Umeya Shel Motzi Shemra. So the cases we're going to talk about afterwards, the monetary payments for, there are other payments, there are other punishments as well, but the monetary payments when it comes to rape and things like that, as just a fixed payment in the Torah, right? So that's clearly not based on the amount of damage that is caused. That's going to be case by case. But the Torah is in addition to all of the other elements and the other problems, or the other restitutions that are based in may say are required, but there is also this penalty payment, this simple fixed amount that clearly is not linked to the actual damage caused, because it's fixed. It's not case by case. It's totally fixed and doesn't make a difference what exactly you know, the details of the case don't affect the amount that is paid back. Okay, so those are two ways that we can define knas, according to Rashi at least. So that's Edim Zomim. To come back, what exactly is the case of Edim Zomim? So as I said, as Jeff pointed out before, they don't seem to be doing anything at all. And not only that, but actually we're talking about a case of Edim Zomim where they're claiming that the person stole something or a person is required to pay something as a result of damage that they caused, and then they're proven to be false. What if they are not claiming anything financial, but they're claiming, as I said, as the case mentioned before, that they're claiming the death penalty for a person? They're saying that this person actually is liable for a death penalty. So that's a much more serious thing. And then, I think this is going to be too detailed and too complex, but for us at the moment, for me at least. But I think that then we get into real details of what exactly is the damage caused and how does it, how do you quantify the damage of a death penalty? We also get into the principle which we've mentioned in the past I'm blanking for a minute on the phrase of kimle b'derabba mine, which is that if you're liable for a very severe punishment, that actually you only end up taking the severe punishment and not the less punishment, and maybe you wouldn't be liable to pay at all because you're liable for the death penalty. So all of that, as I said, really ends up taking us into the nitty gritty details of Edim Zomim, which I think is beyond our scope for the moment. But leaving it as the slightly simpler case, the Edim Zomim try to cause someone to pay an amount of money. They are unsuccessful in doing that. They are liable to pay that amount of money. The Gemara is saying that is categorized as a knas. That's categorized as a penalty payment rather than a restitution. And the Gemara points out that follows the opinion of Rabbi Akiva, who says that if they admit their wrongdoing without being proven, without a Beis Din having to actually, or a court having to actually find them guilty itself, then that penalty payment is waived, as we have this principle of moda b'knas potter. Someone who admits their wrongdoing does not have to pay any penalty payment. They only have to pay basic restitution. Okay, so that's the case of Edim Zomim.
Well, surely though, if somebody bears false witness against somebody,
you've cut out for me, George.
Now, surely if, say, witnesses claim that I've stolen something or something like that, and they prove to be wrong, the reputational damage is severe.
Yes, okay, so one... So I think that's a good point, and I think that could be a separate discussion in terms of the damage caused, but here we're just talking about the Edim Zomim themselves, right? So, as false witnesses, that principle of having to pay based on what they tried to get you to do, that itself is waived. There could be a separate discussion of whether they have caused separate damages as a result, and then have to pay that restitution. But the basic principle of an aid zomim having to, of this a conspiring witness having to pay back what they asked you to pay, then that's that itself is waived. So again, that could be better and worse. So for instance, if they claim that you stole, a wad of paper. Let's say you're the prime minister, and they say that they saw you stealing a few pads of paper, and as a result, you don't get voted in the next election, as an example. So then the wads of paper worth nothing, right? They're, as an eid zomim, they might be liable. They might have that fee waived, but then the separate case of the restitution may be very, very significant, and they could actually be liable for that. But you could also have the opposite case, right? You could also have the opposite case that, let's say, they claim that hoodlum off the street stole a Ferrari, right? So if they end up paying the knas payment, so then they actually have to pay him the value of this Ferrari. But the value to his reputation was very minimal, because everyone knows that he's a good for nothing fellow anyway. So actually on that side there's is minimal. So as I say, you know, it's a bit up one up one down, and you don't. In some cases, one could be much more. In some cases, the other one could be much more. But here we're specifically focusing on the knas element, on the penalty element, which is totally determined based on, as I say, not on the damage that's caused, but on the what they were trying to do, on the one they were trying to do. The reputational damage is really a separate element. What they were trying to do, i.e., they were trying to get him to pay back, or to, you know, to be liable to pay. Whatever the value of that's whatever the value of that object actually was, okay. But I think these are all very, very good points, which are helping us to clarify these complex gemaras.
It seems to me though that they're quite different things. One is easy to measure, one is very difficult to measure. If you're talking about objects that have value that were stolen or can be identified, is one thing. But if you're talking about reputational damage, et cetera, et cetera, I mean, to me, that they seem to be so overlapping, and yet we're trying to distinguish, absolutely. I find this quite difficult concept.
Well, they're not overlapping in the sense that one is obvious and one is not. As you say, the reputational damage is difficult to define, very difficult to define, very difficult to determine. The amount that they are trying to make him liable for is clear. That is the court case, in a sense. You know, the court case will have an amount associated with it, and either it will be successful or unsuccessful, or they will be found to be guilty, or whatever the. But I imagine that there is a fixed. When you take someone to court, I think maybe I'm wrong, but when you take someone to court, there is a sort of set amount or relatively set amount to the trial, and. And that is the claim. That is the knas. That is the fine that they will end up being liable for or not liable for, depending on the case. But the reputational damage is unquestionably hard to define. Most of what we talk about in Baba Kama is about liability and not about how the amounts are determined. How the amounts are determined are much, much more case by case and difficult Again, it's difficult to define. There are principles that appear elsewhere, but not really so much over here. The way in which these amounts are determined are very much part of the reason why the Gemara doesn't define them is because they change in time and place. And actually, for instance, a Beis Din will often follow regular whatever local law is in terms of determining these sorts of values, right? These sorts of values are often legally determined based on the time and place. So it's not for the halacha doesn't often define those amounts specifically. When the halacha defines clear amounts, it's much more often linked to a knas, linked to a penalty payment, as we've said before, as opposed to a restitutional payment. The restitutional payments are going to vary wildly, as I said, depending on time and place, whether you're in second century Persia or 21st century America, or anything in between. There's going to be a massive difference between the two, both in terms of amount and in terms of the way they're determined and the value for those different things.
Rabbi, am I right that Edim Zomim are only liable if they are not believed? Because if they are believed, then they're not found to be false witnesses.
The question is, at what point? We're obviously talking about a case where they are ultimately proven to be false, because otherwise nothing to discuss. We don't know that they're Edim Zomimin. The question is, at what point does that happen? If it's during the court case, as it were, or if it's during the okay, I'm not going to define it. There's big debates as to whether it's before the court case is finished or before the punishment's carried out, or at what point exactly is the cutoff. But let's say it's early on in the trial, right, and nothing has actually happened, then they are considered to be Edim Zomimin. If it's after the punishment has already been carried out, then they are definitely not considered to be Edim Zomimin as we say, there may be slightly separate questions in terms of what they're liable for, but in terms of this category of Adim Zomimin, they are no longer categorized as a conspiring witness. So it's not about whether they're caught. They're definitely caught and they're definitely disproven. Point is when. Okay, well, we're already at 9:30, but let's see if we can just find a good place to continue for next time. So Ein Rishalmin Al Pi Atzmon. So the Gemara has just said at the first line, we'll continue from the first line again. Sovar Loka Rabbi Akiva, he's holding of the opinion, he's following the opinion of Rabbi Akiva, to Omer Ein Mishalmin At Pi Atzmon, they do not pay if they admit to their to the fact that they have they're making the whole story up themselves because it's considered to be a knas. So the Gemara then asks, if they are following following the opinion of Rabbi Akiva, then lisne tre gavne shor. So then we should have distinguished when it came to the category of a shor of an ox. Why the azik shor lisne shor da azik shor. We should have distinguished between the two, an ox causing damage to an ox and an ox causing damage to a human. Why? Let's just continue. Another line. Ditnan, Rabbi Kiva Omer, because Rabbi Kiva is of the opinion, Aftam Shechoval Ba'odam, Meshalim Ba'mosar Nezek Shalim. So Rabbi Kiva is of the opinion that even a Shuratam, even this animal which has never gored before, who actually causes damage to a person, then they pay the full amount, and they pay of the best. So therefore, that seems to be again something which is just a new category. So we should have added that as a separate category. It should have been something which is totally. Totally different. Now, why exactly the two of these are connected, I think, is something which we're going to have to figure out. But let's just continue with the next couple of lines to finish off this part of Adim Zomimin and this opinion of Rabbi Akiva. So the Gemara then responds, Ha Tavrei Rabbi Akiva Ligzize. So this is an expression, Aramaic expression, basically means Rabbi Akiva was broke his fist, right? He was obviously very, very strong on this point and was trying very, very hard to figure it out. De Tanya, because we have this brass which quotes Rabbi Akiva as follows. Rabbi Akiva Omer, he says the following. Yochol af tam shechoval. But Adam Yishalem in Ha'aliyah, he says, no, it's possible if we say that that even this tam, even this shor tam, this shor which has never, this ox which has never gored before, actually causes damage to a person, Yishalem in Ha'aliyah pays from the best, then Talmud Lomer, Yei Oseh Lo. So he says that's no good because the Torah uses the phrase Yei Oseh Lo. It should be done to him, and we make. The Gemara uses that language to imply that migufa mishalim, that the amount has to be paid from the best land, not from the full amount, but only up to the value of migufo, up to the value of the animal itself. Migufa mishalim ve'ena mishalim in ha'aliyah, and does not actually pay the full amount. Does not pay. Endlessly, does not pay no matter what, but actually only pays up until that that final amount. And basically what the Gemara is, I think we're definitely going to need to spend more time on this next time, but basically what the Gemara is trying to prove from there is that we see that even this ox, which cause damage to a person, since it does pay the full amount. Since it does pay the full amount, Rabbi Oshia did not actually include it. It did not include it as a separate category. and that's why it wasn't added on as its own separate thing. Okay, let's start again from there. I thought that was going to be a conclusion of Rabbi Akiva's opinion, which would help us to understand Edim Zomerman. I think it's really a very separate point, which moves on to talking about and moves us back to talking about some of the distinctions of Shur that we talked about earlier. So I think we'll begin again from there, just to go back a stage to wrap up what we have actually talked about and hopefully understood, is that we had this Brice of Rabbi Chia, which led us to the 24 different categories of damages. We then began to take that apart. Before we took that apart, we distinguished. We said the reason why Rabbi Akiva has his more expansive list is because he is adding on not just restitutional payments, not just paying back what you're liable for, but knas as well, penalty payments as well. And then we began by questioning some of those things that we've seen and saying, Are those really penalty payments, or are they basic payments? And we started off by asking that with regards to a ganav and a gazlan, two different types of thieves. And then we also asked that with regards to Edim Zomerman, which was these conspiring witnesses. And all of that took us quite a while, because it is definitely very, very complex stuff. And as I said, forget the last part we talked about. I think we'll definitely have to spend time on that next time. Okay. Any last questions, comments before we wrap up? Okay, so in terms of next time, I'll assume that we're back to the regular time.
Mm-hmm.
I'll assume, so we'll say the 19th of October. 19th of October at 2 p.m.
Okay.
Yes?
Okay. Yeah, okay.
Okay, lovely. Thank you for joining me in the sukkah. Very nice.
Thank you very much, Rabbi.
Thank you.
All right. Chag Sameach, everyone.
Chag Sameach.